Hello all, it is a glorious day, and we got a great show coming up on What's Bugging Me. TikTok bad, Twitter files worse, and the Chinese government worst of all. But first, we're going to talk about the trans shooter at the Christian school in Nashville and point out a few inconvenient truths. So let's fire one up. Hello, my friends, and welcome to episode 18 of What's Bugging Me. I have a whole special China edition ready to go for you today, but I feel compelled to say a few things to you first about the aftermath of the horrible shooting deaths of three 60-year-old adults and three 9-year-old children at a private Christian school in Nashville on Monday by a 28-year-old woman who had attended the school as a student and who was a trans, declaring that she was a man. It's a terrible tragedy. It's inexplicable. And it took maybe 5 minutes for activists to take to Twitter and the media to start arguing about it. The Democrats and gun control advocates said instantly, ban assault weapons. But a ban on assault weapons is a fake fix. Only 4% of all gunshot deaths involve assault weapons in 2021, according to the Gun Violence Archive. Last year, 20,000 Americans were murdered by guns. 5 times as many people died of fentanyl and opioid overdoses. And the media and our government are largely ignoring that far bigger crisis. Handguns are used in over 60% of all murders. Are we going to ban every single one of those, too? To prevent one death, you would have to seize 20,000 weapons. Good luck trying. A study by the RAND Corporation says the evidence is inconclusive that an assault weapons ban has any effect at all. Over half of all gunshot deaths each year are suicides. So banning AR-15s won't help them. The real answer lies in better mental health services and new ways to share mental health records and criminal records with gun application systems. But no, the politicians will keep on fighting over a ban on AR-15s. Now to the other issue in this Nashville shooting, the trans issue. These 6 innocent people were murdered by a biological woman turned trans man who had planned the massacre very carefully. She or he, whatever you want to call they, armed with 2 AR-15s and a pistol. She'd bought 7 guns legally in the past few years. This shooter was 28 years old. She had attended that private school in Nashville where she returned to do these terrible things. Now the media are having a hard time with the identity, the he or she or the ridiculous they. In the aftermath, NBC News and other media are focusing on how afraid the trans community is now. Never mind that the fear of the people who are at the Presbyterian school that they might be feeling, and other churches. But the confusion in the media says kind of where we are today and how far American society has gone to bend over backwards to accommodate trans people and the media and Hollywood and big tech and Washington. It's all gone crazy. It's gone too far. And guess what? It's not enough. The trans community is the most extreme wing of the LGBTQ movement. It is now the tail wagging the dog, and the trans community plays the victim. Some activists claim there's a trans genocide going on. On Twitter, posters were promoting a day of vengeance for trans people, set for one day after the shooting. On NPR, a story profiled trans people who were arming themselves and training for gun battles because it's so dangerous out there. It is a manipulative lie, and the statistics show it. Last year, something like 266 hate crimes against all LGBTQ people recorded in all of America in the crime statistics. 266, only 35 or so of these crimes were against trans people. And now it turns out, if Twitter is to be believed, 4 mass shooters have been trans. Maybe the authorities ought to look into that angle, but I doubt they will. They are terrified of being called transphobic. 2 other trans people shot at police in separate incidents recently, and they were killed. And my bet is that their deaths, and the shooter on Monday, her death, will be added to the toll that trans activists cite to say there's genocide going on against trans people. They really ought to take a harder look at themselves. Up next, we're going to take a hard look at China.
I'm James Dellingpole. The difference between being called a conspiracy theorist and a journalist these days seems to be about 6 weeks. Ideas that we would have all laughed at pre-COVID seem to be becoming true at an alarming rate. Join me on the Delling Pod as we keep you on the cutting edge of the news cycle with guests and opinions you won't hear anywhere else. That's the Delling Pod, right here on the Ricochet Audio Network or wherever you get your podcasts.
At long last, we have a rare outbreak of bipartisanship in Washington. Democrats and Republicans both want to ban TikTok from America, but I doubt it's ever going to happen, even though the threat here is very real. The threat from China, our biggest enemy. Lots of fireworks at a congressional hearing late last week, grilling the Singaporean-born CEO of TikTok for 5 hours. Politicians in both parties say TikTok is too addictive for kids and it collects too much data on users. Where they are, what they're doing, what they're viewing, what they believe. There's like 150 million Americans on TikTok, including politicians and officers at law enforcement agencies and Secret Service agents and NGOs and business leaders and actors and sports stars and singers and social media influencers. Two-thirds of American teenagers are on TikTok. Do we want to give the communist government of China instant access to all of them to get across its own message to them even better than the U.S. government can do it? And that propaganda angle may be the thing that frightens politicians the most. It would be one thing if this TikTok app were made by a company based in, say, Canada. Canada likes us. But TikTok belongs to ByteDance, which is based in China. And the leaders of the Chinese government hate us. And they want to replace us. You know, critics complain that TikTok is too tied to the Chinese government. The CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, could use TikTok to spy on Americans and preach propaganda to them. They could detect the whereabouts of the president at all times if one of his bodyguards had TikTok on his phone, or get hold of racy home videos made by some randy congressman who uses the app and then extort him to support pro-China policies. The same goes for a justice of the Supreme Court or the CEO of a huge social media platform. And the TikTok turmoil is part of a larger problem. Right now, the top four most popular apps used by young people in the U.S. are made by Chinese companies. There's Temu, an app created just 7 months ago for shopping. It was number one in March, the Wall Street Journal reports. Number two was a TikTok video editing app called CapCut. Coming in third was a TikTok itself. And then the Chinese fast fashion retailer Shein, S-H-E-I-N, came in fourth. That's four Chinese hits. Facebook, American-made, came in at number five. And get this, the TikTok that serves America is different. It's worse. Different from the TikTok that is allowed to serve China, where the app is more educational and user time is limited and content is censored and carefully cultivated and curated. China wants to replace the United States of America as the world's one real superpower and the world's biggest economy. And this would be bad for everyone else on Earth. China, and by China I mean the Chinese government rather than the Chinese people, China is a threat to world stability and world peace. They want to beat us. And TikTok is a Trojan horse, one of many the Chinese government is using. At this hearing last week, before the House Energy and Commerce Committee, the TikTok CEO, Shou Zi Chu, testified for the better part of 5 hours. It was a disaster for TikTok and for the Chinese government. Give a listen to a few haymakers here from Democrats and Republicans alike.
You're trying to give the impression that you're going to move away from Beijing and the Communist Party. You're trying to give the impression that you're a good actor. But the commitments that we would seek to achieve those goals are not being made today.
You couldn't take action after 41 days when a clear threat, a very violent threat to the chairwoman of this committee and the members of this committee was posted on your platform. You damn well know that you cannot protect the data and security of this committee or the 150 million users of your app.
You have not given straightforward answers. We don't find you credible on these things.
Lots of outrage, some of it heartfelt, some of it. Meanwhile, in Beijing, Apple CEO Tim Cook made a friendly speech on Saturday at an economic conference sponsored by the Chinese government. He told a rather adoring crowd, quote, "This has been a symbiotic kind of relationship that we have both enjoyed. I'll bet. What's wrong with this picture? The U.S. is in a tense face-off with China. Our Secretary of State, Blinken, Winken, and Nod, has delayed a state visit to Beijing because of the spy balloon flap. Congressmen in both parties in Washington are demonizing TikTok for the China connection. And Apple, meanwhile, is busy glad-handing back in Beijing. Big tech wants China so bad, and China smacks them around whenever it wants. And it has done that for 20 years. And Congress is no better, really. It doesn't really make sense what they're doing. Think about it. So Republicans and Democrats are up in arms over the TikTok app, but they don't care that factories in China are producing millions of Apple iPhones equipped with the most advanced smartphone technology on Earth? Did you know that Google has opened a research lab in Beijing to pursue advances in artificial intelligence? And Google has opened a second lab there as well? The congressmen don't care about that either, and they should. Now, they do want to force the sale of TikTok to a U.S. company or ban it from the U.S. entirely, and here's what's bugging me about that, frankly. I get the feeling this is a fake debate, a debate held just for the cameras, sound and fury, before they do nothing. And my guess is Washington won't be banning TikTok at all. And if it tries to ban it, it will be a mess, technologically, legally, and even constitutionally. There is no rolling back TikTok. I don't think there is. The TikTok genie is out of the bottle, baby, and there is no way to put it back in. The federal government has pushed hard to ban sophisticated technology exports to China and to ban telecom gear made by Chinese companies like Huawei and ZTE. Stop them from infiltrating U.S. wireless networks with 5G. And the government also has blocked some deals between U.S. firms and Chinese investors. But the federal government did nothing regarding TikTok. While this new app spread into the smartphones of 150 million Americans and a billion people around the world, TikTok employs 7,000 people in the U.S., and thousands of businesses use TikTok for marketing and advertising. So, it's too late to ban TikTok. Politicians collapse in the face of the smallest opposition, and banning TikTok would rile up way too many Americans. Let's say the U.S. decides instead to try to force ByteDance to spin off U.S. TikTok as a separate U.S.-owned company. How can you bulletproof that and make sure it really is free of Chinese influence? The company offers to sequester all U.S. data on U.S. servers at a U.S. site monitored by Americans. But again, how do you trust but verify, as Reagan put it to Gorbachev 40 years ago? Let's say the government orders Apple and Google to remove TikTok from their app stores. Well, users still can get TikTok from websites overseas. Technologically, there are many ways to evade a supposed U.S. ban. And then you get into enforcement. Is the government going to arrest users for downloading TikTok after it's banned? What a mess. The feds could cite national security, that old canard, that old excuse for any overreach government ever wants to make. But in fact, the U.S. Supreme Court might even issue a ban on any ban. Because it would amount to the federal government's imposing a prior restraint on Americans' rights to say what they want on TikTok, a major platform that millions of Americans now use. How could that even be constitutional, putting a stop to that? Especially with no proof. What have we seen it even go wrong? What has the Chinese government done wrong with TikTok? Now, the First Amendment bans any government-imposed prior restraint on free speech. So what do you do? Something must be done about TikTok. For all the evils of the Chinese government,
putting them aside for the moment. You also have to be aware of the incredible hypocrisy on display at the hearing last week, right? I mean, come on, man. So all of Washington, basically, is telling the Chinese government, hey, you can't use social media to spy on Americans and flood them with government propaganda, because only the U.S. government can do that. The U.S. government is doing to Twitter what we accuse China of doing to TikTok. While Dems and Republicans rail against TikTok, our government has taken over Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and YouTube and other social media platforms. And our government, the FBI and the CIA and the Department of Homeland Security, the agencies overseeing the COVID response, our government has used these platforms to silence conservatives and thousands of other accounts. The Twitter Files expose shows it, provided incontrovertible evidence of this fact. It is a monumental scandal of our lifetime, and many Americans haven't heard of it. And it's still going on. In fact, the Twitter Files produced one of the more riveting hearings in Congress in a long while, and chances are you never heard about it because the media are burying this story, ignoring it, just like they're ignoring the Twitter Files, right? It's really rare for journalists to testify before Congress, much less testify about how the FBI and the CIA and Homeland Security and dozens of other agencies pressured Twitter and the other platforms into muzzling thousands of accounts without the people ever knowing it. So there's this Republican-led House Select Subcommittee on the weaponization of the federal government. What it's investigating really is the government's weaponization of Twitter and other social media platforms to silence mostly conservative voices. And the committee invited two independent journalists to testify, Matt Taibbi and Michael Schellenberger. These are the two indies who have led the Twitter Files expose. They aren't connected to any major media platform. They don't work for the New York Times or the Washington Post. They're out on their own, just like I am, right here on the independent Ricochet platform. The ranking minority Democrat on this panel is Stacey Plaskett, a non-voting member from the Virgin Islands. And before the two witnesses could even begin, she takes a gratuitous swipe at them. And give a listen.
You know what the Republican report actually shows? Two conclusions. First, the FTC has extraordinarily serious concerns about Twitter's handling of consumers' data, and that there's something going on between congressional Republicans and Elon Musk. Mr. Chairman, Americans can see through this. Musk is helping you out politically, and you're going out of your way to promote and protect him and to praise him for his work. This isn't just a matter of what data was given to these so-called journalists before us now. There are many legitimate questions about where Musk got the financing to buy Twitter.
Oh, snap. On the C-SPAN recording, you can see Taibbi turn to his colleague, Michael Schellenberger, and give him a double take and crack a what the flup smile. So-called journalists, can you believe that? But Matt Taibbi does a great job of returning serve. Here he goes. At the end, you can hear Jim Jordan sniggering in appreciation. It's kind of funny. Let's cue it up.
Ranking Member Plaskett, I'm not a so-called journalist. I've won the National Magazine Award, the IF Stone Award for Independent Journalism, and I've written 10 books, including four New York Times bestsellers.
The Democrats are doing all they can to undermine this investigation, and the media are doing all they can to ignore it, just as they've ignored the Twitter Files from the get-go. Because what the hell? It was only Trump and conservatives who were silenced. What's the worry? And both the media and the dimwit Democrats miss an important point. This wasn't just government and social media censoring conservatives. This was federal government censoring all kinds of Americans. Yes, mostly conservatives, but next time it could be mostly liberals. And all of it is a violation of your First Amendment rights. Remember, it isn't just the thousands of people whose accounts were shut down who had their rights violated. It's also millions of Americans on Twitter who had the First Amendment right to hear what those accounts had to say, if they so chose. Today, the real journalists are the so-called journalists. They didn't even cover this hearing, even though it was a rare event. It was newsworthy. You get the feeling they're hiding their own involvement at some point. A week after the hearing, the Washington Post carried a newsletter item praising the snide Democrat, Stacey Plaskett. She is a so-called representative because she lacks any vote in the House. And asked if she believes that Taibbi and Schellenberger are legitimate journalists, she answers to the Post, "Well, I do believe that they have in the past engaged in legitimate journalism. I also believe that there's conduct that journalists are supposed to have that they have not exhibited, particularly when it comes to the Twitter files." And her comments apply far better to the supposedly real journalists of today. I'm going to take a break here. Please give What's Bugging Me your highest rating in the Apple iTunes Store and on Google and Spotify. And tell your friends and send them links to the show. Coming up, China has been lying to us for decades. Entrepreneur and author Carol Kretschmann joins us to talk about her China adventure. She moved there long ago to build a skating rink and ended up building a hotel in Beijing in a swirl of government surveillance, deception, and even a little bit of illegal arms dealing.
I am Andrew Gutman.
And I'm Beth Feely, and we're a couple of accidental activist parents who woke up and started speaking out about issues that we saw in our children's schools.
So join us every week on Take Back Our Schools on the Ricochet Audio Network or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ricochet. Join the conversation.
Now we're going to talk with Carol Kretschmann. She has had a fabulous career and a really interesting life. Carol is an entrepreneur. She may be the only octogenarian, I don't know, ever to land a U.S. patent. She also is a social activist. Her organization, Peacekeeper Corps, gets kids around the world to tell their lives through filmmaking. And she's affiliated with the UN on that. And in the 1980s, and that's why we're going to talk to Carol Kretschmann today, she and her husband were among the very first Americans ever allowed to go to China and start a business there. It started with one thing, it turned into quite another. And now Carol Kretschmann's latest career is as a book author. She's just written her own book on her time in China with her husband called About Face, meaning in China, it's all about face. The true story of an American couple in China entangled in a web of intrigue and crime, which is one of the better teasers, I think, that we can come up with. Thanks so much for being with us here, Carol. I've known you for quite a few years, and I've always been fascinated by your goings-on. So tell us about your book.
The book is the story of how we got to China, and then what did we do when we got there.
This is 1980, what?
Right at the beginning of the 80s.
Okay.
81, 82. Okay. 79. I think so, we opened the World on Wheels in the late 70s. It was there, still there until recently.
The reason Carol Kretschmann has just written this new book about face, about her time in China in the 80s, is because she actually feels it's a cautionary tale and it offers a guide to anyone thinking of doing business in China today. Because while a lot has changed in China, there are certain fundamental things that have not changed. So maybe you can tell us about that. I mean, do you think that there are things that you saw back in the 80s that you feel like, yep, that's China today? Tell us those parallels, maybe?
Maybe. I'm, you know, we were there for a decade. Started in early 80s. We left in the early 90s.
Uh-huh.
And we were there for Tiananmen Square, when the kids were rolled over by the tanks, visually there. We were there when Malcolm Forbes took his balloon and flew it over Tiananmen Square. I was there with Steve, his son, and we were. Steve says to me, as the balloon is going up, he says, "My dad's going to cut the tether. I know he will." So he did. And the Chinese went crazy because the balloon was going. They were afraid it was going to go over their secret places and whatever. I mean, this was our life. And we ended up being presented with an office in the Beijing Hotel, which had been Occidental's office. they moved to an office building and they gave us that space. So where we lived when we were in China was in the Beijing Hotel, which had famous people and very difficult to get into. And that until after Tiananmen Square, where we moved into another office building. But we went there to look at what we could do with the entertainment. And we ended up building a hotel office apartment complex, which was the very first one that ever happened in China. It was in Beijing. Yeah. And it had a 17-story hotel. And part of it was for longtime visitors so they could like rent apartments. And the address was a regular hotel. It was all in one building. And then we also built a smaller building that was for offices and looked like a pagoda.
Now, Carol, at the time, you'd done a good job, doing the skating rink in Los Angeles. And you originally thought maybe we'll go there and do a skating rink. But now suddenly you're looking at a 17-story hotel project. And yet you guys had no expertise in that, did you? Why would they trust that you could do that?
Well, I am an architect.
Oh, that's right. Okay. You're an architect. My goodness. Okay.
And my husband was a technologist.
I see. But don't you say in your book, or at least didn't you tell me that without your knowing it, it ended up there's some kind of arms dealing going on beneath the surface there or something? Or have I just confused that?
Yes, there was a deal going on.
Tell us about that.
It was a deal for the open pit coal mine up in Shaanxi province that Hammer wanted. And so we were the shill for that.
Without even knowing that you were the shill for that.
Yeah, I kind of knew that it was. When we got there, we met with the head of Occidental Petroleum down in Guangzhou, where they were drilling for oil, which was more what Occidental was doing. You know, this was, two or three decades after the first time my dad sat around a table and became an investor in the 50s with him.
Yeah.
What we saw, though, was that there was a need for people who lived in that area in Beijing wanted to modernize, were interested in modernizing. Yeah. But they didn't really know what to do with me because I was the wrong sex. I was a woman in a very masculine world. But we were very important to them after Tiananmen Square because we were the only white folks that were there when they rolled over those kids. And it was a disaster because it was on video because that was the only time that the American TV had actually was in China because the president of Russia at the time was coming to meet with the president of China.
Uh-huh.
And that was Ted Turner that was there with his video crew. So you have.
So we that's were, why they were able to capture that.
Right.
To be there so, at the time.
But we had already been building the project. The project was going to take a very, it was supposed to be maybe 3 years, and then we were already in year eight or seven. And what happened after Tiananmen Square is that they just raced everything. They just ratcheted everything up, and they wanted to be open for the Asian Games, which was right at the end of all of that stuff that happened at Tiananmen Square. But here we are living in China. I don't speak the language. We have a very nice office. Then we moved into another office. But the Chinese, when we first started, didn't really know what to do with me because I was a female and I was also in charge, which was not exactly where they were happy about. But we did build an incredible facility. And after Tiananmen Square, the Chinese got us on a boat, on a train with a translator who didn't speak English. And we went to another city and they dragged us around to every place we could people who had fish, people who had, were building a nest for birds. It was all of this kind of, how do we tell the rest of the world that we're not horrible and we didn't kill these children?
This is with China. They're wanting to build their image, and they're hoping that you can, yeah, see that.
So that worked for them. It's sort of interesting because the Hu Yaban was the head of that organization, but he had played a Willie Loman in Death of a Salesman in China. So there was a lot of crossover. There was a lot of intriguing things that were happening. We met and spent some time with Deng Xiaoping's daughter and her children, his grandchildren. I mean, we became intimate in that country that had that wall around it since the beginning of time. When you think about it, the Great Wall of China was built many eons ago to keep other people out.
Okay. So, but how long did you feel like we are under surveillance versus, oh, they've stopped watching because we're here now and they don't care in your years?
We're always under
surveillance. And mostly. I guess China might still be like that today.
I would think so. Look what they did during the COVID. I mean, they actually locked in their population. And then I'm in the process of getting the book finished, which took a couple of years with research. But we had several different issues, places that we had started and never finished about the book.
Uh-huh.
So when my husband passed away suddenly, it gave me something that I needed to do, which was to tell our story. And there it is. And what is face? You know, about face is, you know, they always want to cover their face. They always want to let people not know what's going on inside their brain.
Yeah, and they will. And we see this. We saw this with COVID-19. They clearly lied to the world. They delayed notice. They kind of insisted it had to come from a bat when the lab leak theory was worth considering.
Well, it came from the Wuhan lab. I was there. Sheldon and I visited Wuhan. We were in many, many cities while the hotel was being built. Yeah. And I was in the Wuhan. I knew it. Because what happened was, if you think, you know, go back and think, the Hong Kong Chinese were on the streets. They took over the new airport. They were rioting in Hong Kong. They wanted freedom. They wanted it to, you know, they wanted what they were promised, that when the queen left, that nothing would change, that they could be their own people at Hong Kong. And that didn't happen. If you remember, they had the water, I mean, everything. And then it ended like that because of the pandemic, because the Wuhan lab brought it down to Hong Kong.
As we discuss China as our number one rival in the world, maybe as our avowed enemy in the world, I think sometimes we fail to separate the Chinese people from the Chinese government. And it is the Chinese government that continues to do a lot of this. And yet I'm sure, I mean, I've been to China a few times more in more recent years, to 10 years ago or more, and loved it and loved the people there. And you found that you loved the people there and the kids you met there. And you had that good story about the balloons you brought there, right? These blow up balloons.
Yes.
You want to tell it? Or?
Well, that was our first issue with it in Tiananmen Square. We didn't know what to bring. We were, you know, we thought, well, we have balloons that we give away at parties in our roller skating rink. And we're in the bowling business too. So we brought a ton of balloons, which they had never seen, and walked around the first time we were there in Tiananmen Square, blowing up balloons, tying them off, and giving them to the kids.
They'd never seen such a thing.
Their eyes got bigger and bigger as the balloon got bigger and bigger, but I was literally blowing them up with my own breath.
Yeah.
And that was the very early on when we first got to China. And so I knew when Hu Yaban died and he wasn't given a proper funeral, the kids from all over the country of China took trains and buses and whatever to get to Tiananmen Square to honor him, because he was the first of their an elected who really wanted to bring in democracy.
Yeah. Were you personally afraid during Tiananmen Square, wondering what would happen to America?
I stood across the street. We were in the Beijing Hotel and watched that happen. And the irony of it is I was, you know, getting information from my team, because this was in the middle of us building the hotel. We had been there for a while, a long time. They said the biggest problem they were having is the dialect. So they brought these young men and with tanks that came from outside of the area of Beijing, and they did. And the language Chinese is different in different parts of China.
About 70 different languages, I think, overall, or something. I read.
So right, so they can't understand. So the people of Beijing were lining and telling, you know, and screaming and saying, you know, don't hurt the kids, don't. But the soldiers that they imported, they didn't really understand the language. So they, or maybe they did, and they just lied about it.
Right.
So lying is about face. That's what this is
to protect your reputation. When you say lying is about face,
they are, you know, they want it to be the way they want it to be.
Even if their behavior was otherwise, even if they're guilty of wrong things otherwise.
Right.
Well, for you know, do you think that American businesses should just shun China market, shun doing business with China? Or do you think instead they should be go in with their eyes open and, you know, a couple of tips for them if they do?
You can't ignore China. You can't ignore it. You have to deal with them. You have to, and that's what we learned.
Carol, I've enjoyed talking with you, and we'll talk to you more. And thank you so much for being here, okay?
Thank you. And tell the audience as you deliver this that they should buy the book. It's not expensive, and it will be an eye-opener, because there's no question that China is going to be the control of this earth some time, and getting closer.
We're the only hope for the world, my friends. We're the only hope for the world. All right, have a glorious day, Carol Kretschmann. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I hope everybody enjoys what we were talking about today.
This is Stephen Hayward of the Powerline blog and the Powerline show on Ricochet, inviting you to tune in each weekend to our 3 Whiskey Happy Hour, where John, you and I, along with the pseudonymous Lucretia, Powerline's international woman of mystery, break down the week's top stories and continue our long-running arguments about first principles, and also critique the best whiskeys available in the world. That's Powerline's 3 Whiskey Happy Hour, hosted by Ricochet, and found on all of your favorite podcast platforms.
And now for today's parting shot. TikTok is only the most visible part of a bigger problem, and it is time we faced up to it. China is our number one enemy. More specifically, the leaders of the Chinese government are our biggest enemy. They don't like us, they lie right to our face, and they want to beat us at any cost. And they will stop at nothing to replace us on the world stage. It pains me to say this, because I had high hopes for China after I visited there a few times. It was 20 years ago, and one trip I made there was with my now ex-wife to adopt my daughter. The best trip of my entire life, and the best thing I ever have done. So, thank you, China, and thank you, Chinese government. For years, your one-child policies to curb your population growth led to the adoption of hundreds of thousands of wonderful Chinese daughters in America and elsewhere. My daughter was one of them. China's loss was my incredible gain. When I went to China, I visited Beijing and Shanghai,
and Xi'an, where we picked up our new daughter, and Guangzhou, where we went for processing at the end of the trip. And everywhere I went, I just loved the people and their energy and their sense of hope for what was coming. I loved the Bund Market in Shanghai, where capitalism has been thriving for 500 years, and it teems with street vendors hawking steaming noodles and tourist trinkets and fake antique jewelry boxes. Super hard bargainers, as I recall. Then I visited the terracotta soldiers in Xi'an, 8,000 of them, clay soldiers buried with an emperor 500 years ago. And I was hopeful that capitalism in China, more U.S. trade with China, would bring China into a new world of transparency and show China the upside of democracy and truthfulness and accountability. It's 20 years later, my daughter's graduating college soon, and China has failed to advance in terms of democracy and fair trade and human rights. The China government still lacks respect for intellectual property rights and human rights. China is a threat to world peace and stability rather than an anchor of either. It will do anything it can to topple us and take over. China still feels zero obligation toward truthfulness. China lies about everything. And by China, I mean the Chinese government and the Communist Party rather than the Chinese people. China lies about the COVID-19 virus leaking from a lab in Wuhan. See episode 13 of What's Bugging Me from March 2nd. China lies about stealing U.S. intellectual property. It lies about keeping a million Uyghurs in forced labor camps. China lied about the spy balloon. See our discussion of this on episode 11, February 16th. Listen to James Arity talk about the China balloon program. James is a Wall Street Journal reporter who spent 18 years in China and was thrown out of the country a few years ago. And China is closer than ever to Russia, supporting Russia's criminal invasion of Ukraine. And this marks 45 years of U.S. policy failure. We have been bowing to China and kowtowing to China since Nixon in 1972 and Jimmy Carter in 1979, hoping to lure China away from Russian influence. And it never has worked. And today, Russia is under China's influence. China is watching Russia's invasion of its neighbors in Ukraine as a test case for China's someday invasion of Taiwan. You know, China has claimed Taiwan ownership for over 50 years, and it is a big, fat lie. China has no historical claim to Taiwan. Taiwan never belonged to China, and history shows this. I wrote about this for the Washington Examiner last year. China also supports Iran and North Korea, the two other big villains on the world stage of unstable actors, China, Russia, Iran, North Korea. It is a quartet of evil. This fearsome foursome ought to have its own name, its own portmanteau. You know, like Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie were Brangelina. You know how they do that for neighborhoods? In New York, Tribeca is for Triangle Below Canal Street, and Dumbo stands for Down Under the Manhattan Bridge Overpass. Well, China, Russia, Iran, North Korea. Let's call this Chirushinoko. Chirushinoko, the most dangerous neighborhood in the world, and China is the landlord. And that does it for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll talk to you guys next week.
Ricochet. Join the conversation.